am sorry. That's not a valid extension. Please try again.
Nevermore.
Waka waka. That's not a valid extension. Please try again. I am sorry. I am sorry.
Waka 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 waka.
Please try again.
Check 1, 2. Testing 1, 2. Wow.
Waka 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 waka.
That's not a valid extension. Please try again.
Mr. Nobody. Episode 21. This episode is about exploring what's going on inside. What's really going on inside?
Sorry.
Waka waka.
Inside, 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 inside. I remember in the days and weeks right after my son died, right after he killed himself.
Please try again.
Because he didn't just die, he ended his life.
Waka 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 waka. With heroin.
In his case, it was fentanyl, or heroin laced with fentanyl. 4 times the amount it took to kill a person his weight.
Nevermore.
I think he weighed 150 pounds.
150 pounds. It's kind of interesting because the complexity of that weight
Nevermore.
Is quite different from the day that he was alive to the day that followed, where he wasn't alive. That 150 pounds was a different type of weight. I think about how complex the human body is and how abusing it is a form of trivialization, and how little we actually know about what's going on inside. Once upon a time in my early 20s, I belonged to a martial arts school, and there was a young dentist there named Steve. Steve offered us the unusual activity of going to his medical school and viewing real live cadavers. Yeah.
Really mild-mannered.
And his point was that we should see what the inside of a person's body looks like. Because here we are constantly concerning ourselves with how to deal with the human body from the outside. And there was some solid reasoning in that.
So,
I think about 10 of us took him up on his offer.
That's not a valid extension. Please try again. I am sorry.
Nevermore.
We went to this university. We went to the room that was the cadaver room. We were outside. We couldn't yet see inside. 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 Inside.
Please try again.
Steve went inside the room and was away for a few minutes and then came back out and said a few words to us.
Waka waka waka.
He gave an apology that some of the bodies were kind of getting old.
That they get
fresh cadavers coming through the school all the time. So that was one thing.
Nevermore.
Sorry, some of these bodies are kind of old.
And he didn't mean old age. He meant not fresh. Not your average.
Not your average.
Not your field.
The next thing
was that we shouldn't feel disgusted or afraid
of seeing these dead bodies,
because the people that were laying in there that used to inhabit those bodies gave their bodies willingly
to science
so that the next generation of doctors could study them,
presumably to be better doctors,
to be better informed. Da Vinci was the master
at trying to figure out what's
trying to figure out what's Leonardo da Vinci's drawings of human anatomy were so detailed. When they were found, they were lost for something on the order of 300 years. When they were
rediscovered,
rolled up in some high shelf
in the Oxford
library, they were still the most detailed drawings of human anatomy to date. And that gives you some idea of natural repulsion and fear. We fear dead things. We deny our own mortality.
Da Vinci used to
have a messenger come to his house to tell him when there was a
only dead person evermore.
There was no cold storage available in the 16th century, and he had to go very quickly to where the dead person was so that he could make anatomical drawings of the inside of their bodies, before it was too late or the church authorities found out. He considered this work, not the Mona Lisa, not the David, not all of his or other great paintings, the anatomy drawings to be his greatest achievement. And that was the stuff that he was the most passionate about. He did the other paintings for patrons who paid him. The anatomy drawings, he did for himself. Because he knew it was one of the most important things.
What's really going on in there?
I digress. Meanwhile, back at the medical school, the 10 of us are anxiously clustered together outside the room of the cadavers. And Steve is giving us the speech, this very heartfelt, low-key, but deep speech about how these people did something wonderful, did something important with their death. And we were all congregated outside the door. We were afraid. There was nerves. As fellow martial arts students, we knew each other somewhat, but not entirely as friends. We weren't all acquainted with each other intimately. And we got to see each other in this hallway in a very real way. Because for those few moments, we were faced with our own instinctual and conditioned response to not only death as an abstraction,
but dead bodies
as a reality. Because in just a few moments,
we were going to go in there.
I can't do it.
There was
very intense
reaction
when it was time to go in. Because the only thing separating the living
from the dead
was a 2-inch wooden door. And there was a little window in that door, but you couldn't quite see over to where the bodies were.
Nevermore.
And then the moment came, and Steve opened the door and said,
"Come on."
You can do it.
Something really encouraging and really calming.
You can do it.
It was important. It was meaningful.
It wasn't voyeuristic
or disrespectful. But it was, like with Leonardo, it somehow was the most important thing you could do. To go and respect these people's last contribution
to humanity.
The giving of their bodies. So in we went, and I don't remember if it was one by one or as a
couple of groups of us
going through that door, but there was a sort of
tiptoeing,
hand over the eyes, anxiety. And as we entered and looked towards our left, the room opened up. It was large. The size of two large classrooms put together. And there was maybe 30
tables
that were meant to hold a
cadaver.
I think cadaver is a medical term.
Sorry.
And there they were. Under sheets. The outlines of bodies.
Under sheets. Under sheets.
30 of them at least. Steve evidently was looking around for a couple of fresh enough bodies to show us the inside. Steve knew where he was taking us. So as we
wove our way,
like a snake of living humans, holding on to each other, we went and congregated around this one sheet-draped
corpse.
And Steve, with one motion, pulled the sheet down to the feet.
Waka, waka, waka.
And now the reality started
really hitting home.
It was a man. His head had been removed. And I shortly found out,
as did we all,
that all of the heads had been removed. And the reason was,
the head and the brains of these people went to a different department.
A different department.
So no heads.
Heads.
No heads.
But arms and hands, legs, genitalia, feet.
The human body in that state was, how do I put this, semi-preserved. The skin was tough, and they just seemed like leathery.
It's hard to explain.
Not mannequins. Not mannequins. And everything that were made out of. But it was dry. There was no blood.
I should not refer to them as it.
They were dry. Their flesh was dry. There was no signs of trauma or violence as we might think of a dead body. There also seemed to be not so much sign of sickness. Because I guess with cadavers, they try to find people that were relatively healthy for this kind of study. So there was a sense that you were not looking at somebody
who had gotten themselves there
through violence or sickness, abuse or neglect.
They just died.
I would have been the same age at that time as my son was when he ended his life. I try to look back on myself at that age.
23.
I don't think I would have stuck a needle in me. I didn't trust that shit. I was experimenting with mushrooms, but I was not even taking acid. Not anymore, because you couldn't trust it. But we found mushrooms growing in the park, and I'll do an entire episode about that.
One little aside.
After my son died, and his body was laying in the morgue, I felt such rage, such anger. Those words can't even sum it up. The feeling I had was a mixture of grief, disgust, anger, and rage. My mother came all the way to the city to see me, because I couldn't really leave my apartment the day after the news came. And we had a conversation about his dead body. And she asked me, when are you going? And I said, I'm not going. He's not there. I'm not going to deal with this bullshit, this absolute garbage, this complete degradation and trivialization of life. I'm not going to subject myself. I don't want to show him to other people.
As if this is some sort of normal thing.
Oh, look, come and pay your respects to my son. There's nothing to respect about this death. And she said to me, you should go. There's nothing to be afraid of. And to look upon a dead body can be beautiful.
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 I could not believe the words that were coming out of her mouth. But my mother does not speak unless she knows. And she had been through death. And she knew something. She acknowledged my anger. But she said, you should go and see him and collect him. And a body starts to deteriorate quickly.
Quickly.
There's no way to ship him. And I had to put my anger and my
disgust.
Because that's what it was. It was disgust.
That a perfectly beautiful, healthy,
amazing human would just stop their heart just to get fucked up. And he knew better. He knew that was wrong. Just like you know it's wrong. There's no excuse. Back to the medical school. Let's take a look inside. So Steve brought us to the person that he selected. The sheet was down, and there was this man. And it's real easy to disassociate and try to distance oneself from something
we fear,
repelled fear, by fear, in some way. And certainly looking at a deceased
body
reminds us that we're heading that way, and we're in no hurry, and we want to deny that fact.
On some level.
It's tricky, especially for us lay people that do not deal with death in the hospital on a daily basis. But this was a deep dive into the inside of a human being.
Nevermore.
What's going on in there? We're so ignorant. We don't even know how our hair grows, or what our digestion does, or really anything. We have aches and pains, and we guess at what it is. And then when we abuse ourselves and we're sick, we ask doctors to fix us. Anyhow,
there's
the man, no head, and I notice that he has some tattoos, and that sort of snaps me back into reality, that this is not some abstract test of my fortitude. But this was a real person who gave his body to be studied, and that he had a life, and these tattoos somehow represented his life. And I bore down on them a bit, and I could see that they had something to do with the Navy, that he had either been in the Navy or loved it so much that he got tattoos relating to it. And there were some other marks on him, some other tattoos. And I made up a story in my mind how important each one of these faded green pictures and
words,
how much each one of those things meant to him, and that his life was somehow measured through the addition of those tattoos. And his fingers and hands looked normal, like he could kind of wave or move or grab you as you were moving closer next to him to look inside of his guts. So Steve lifted up this trap door that was over his chest, that was cut like a square, like a rectangle, and removed it. It was a trap door leading into the inside of what used to be this man. And his remains were still there, and some marks of his life were still there. And now we were going to take a look inside and see what his heart and what his lungs looked like. Steve started showing us where to look, and he even asked if somebody wanted to take a poke and feel where some of the organs were.
I think I might have done that.
And there were some members of our group that were kind of freaking out, because it was pretty freaky. But it was also contextualized in a beautiful way, that there was something beautiful about this whole process. It was about illumination, reverence, respect, and appreciation. Like, this guy, you could somehow tell, loved his fucking life enough to put these meaningful tattoos on himself and give his body so a group of us 20-somethings could take a look inside. And sure enough, we saw his heart and his lungs and some other things that were there. And one thing that really stuck out was that if you ever see like a brand new car and they open the hood of a brand new car, how tightly packed everything is. There's almost no room even to fit a finger. And that's what it's like inside. It's wrapped up in there and winded around itself.
And this thing is tucked in this one little spot up and over and back.
This other little organ is only touchable if you push over this other thing. And you just get the sense that we're like a watch.
It's wound up.
It's tense. And all this stuff is working in the most synchronistic way. How everything would need to function in order to function well. And how much we just take that for granted. And this man,
let's call him Fred.
Fred had a healthy body. You could see that. None of these cadavers were obese or damaged. Was something I was seeing that he never even saw. Like, Fred never looked inside himself.
Unless it was metaphorical.
Or in some way through an x-ray.
Not like this.
And I felt a gratitude, Fred,
to allow
a group of strangers,
but
fellow humans,
who all
are experiencing something like this, some ignorance about what's really going on, what's really under our skin,
and
our entire belief system and psychology
is just
ramming forward, full of self-importance
and
invented meaning,
and
we have no idea
what we really made.
And I'm not a believer in the supernatural.
Like, I don't believe in gods.
And that some god created our species or the first man. But there was an amazing design
or
engine under that hood, under that trapdoor. That's what Leonardo was looking at. I really believe that. He was looking into the biological wonder. He was looking under the hood of all the stuff, all the beauty he was painting on the outside. What it really consisted of. Just a half inch underneath the skin. I may have taken Fred's hand for a moment.
Because
the experience was so profound, so moving,
and so revealing
in the most literal of ways that I think I shook or squeezed his hand and whispered thank you into the missing head.
Thanks, Fred.
For living a long life, healthy life,
a meaningful life,
and caring enough about humanity to give your corpse to a medical school
so that you can be studied
and people like us could have this experience and that the
future doctors
were training on the real thing.
Thanks, Fred.
I remember asking the medical examiner if any part of my son
could be
saved or used,
like his eyes or his
kidney or heart, and he said no.
Unfortunately, no.
It had been too long. What a waste. 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 What a waste.
Get up. Get up.
Nevermore. Nevermore. What a waste.
A waka waka waka.
Nevermore.
form.
I did go down to collect his body, to find a funeral home, to talk to the medical examiner, to clean his room and smell the stench of death.
Get his phone to the police to see if they could find the drug dealer.
It was very, very hard walking into his front door, through the living room, down the hall, seeing his chin-up bar, the workout gloves, the hand wraps, then opening his door, a room where I'd spent many hours with him that he no longer existed. That was hard. I had a weird experience at the funeral home.
These people are weird.
The assistant director of the funeral home were telling me
that they had
directed some form of, I don't know,
seeing him.
And he was placed in a room, and there was another funeral going on across the hallway where people were
losing their minds.
But this funeral director,
the assistant,
was telling me
that
the viewing or whatever would happen at a certain time. It turns out later what he was saying is that he had specifically
orchestrated
a moment where we would see my son. But I just walked into that room, closed the door, walked up to my son's casket that his mother, my daughter, and myself paid for.
We all put money in to buy him a really nice fucking box.
And there he was. His eyes were shut so tight.
That's not a valid extension. Just,
waka, waka, waka.
His hair had been cut and he had been shaved, and it looked like he was holding his breath. And I had to
officiate
this whole experience because who else can? And so I stood there for the majority of the time near him while other people came by. I remember a few people specifically. One was a lady who was a police officer who was one of the students at my son's school. And she just showed no grief, but just strength. She looked at me and she had these very blue eyes and she just held my gaze without saying anything. And there was just a message in her look that said, "This is what is."
Waka waka.
This is what is.
Evermore, evermore, evermore.
Another person that sticks in my memory is his English professor. She was so distraught, and I could tell that she was not a person who let herself be that way easily. She was truly
disturbed
by the whole scene, and that it was my son, this bright, clean-cut, fit, interesting, artistic young man, laying in that fucking coffin. She had been mentoring him. He mentioned her on many occasions. There was nothing I could say to her to explain, excuse, or illuminate why this was happening.
There was no good reason for it.
And I tried to let her know that I shared her disbelief, her anguish, her disappointment, and her loss. And I know this is going to sound shitty, but then there came some kids who were clearly just fucking drug addict kids. I hate saying that, but you could just tell. They just looked like fucking drug addicts. This was a group of friends that I did not know personally or even know of. My son mentioned that he had different groups of people that he hung out with, and that there was this one group that just had, he didn't mention much more about it, what their issues were, or their issue is. Well, it was a handful of shit. Drug use was right in the mix, and it was
sort of normalized drug use.
Yeah, of course I do drugs.
How he met them, where he met them,
or what was what.
But they acted fucking ridiculous at his funeral, coming in and out,
laughing,
smoking cigarettes, just being complete
fucking
dickholes. They were acting like this was just another day. Except for this one kid my son had been playing music with and had been sending me their weekly get-together jam sessions. I found out later that my son had actually shot this kid up with ketamine, because evidently my son was good at using a needle, something I did not know. And this kid was hanging his head.
He was there with his girlfriend.
But this one kid was really distraught. And I came up to him and I said, I know you and my son use drugs together.
You need to tell me about that.
And he didn't see that coming. And I said, it's okay. You know, there's nothing
to hide now.
Did you use drugs with my son?
First of all, how fucking stupid am I?
And he and his girlfriend looked at each other, and he turned to me and just shook his head yes, that they had been using drugs. And so I was filling in blanks.
Meeting people.
I was unaware of groups of friends that
I would
have
not
wanted him around. He was on a bad path. It's a tough
circle to square.
And he felt very guilty, I could tell. He was not an instigator.
I could see that.
He was maybe a drug addict. He wasn't like a type of person that lured my son. My son did what he wanted to do. He chose.
Nobody forced him. And I knew that in my
gut, under my trapdoor. I know that's true. And before I could speak with him much more, I was interrupted by some other
side activity going on. Some other funeral related business.
And that little brief interaction opened a window into what my son was doing. I called that kid on the phone a couple of times, but he was very evasive and didn't want to talk to me. Once death comes through your little neighborhood, you just want to distance yourself because it's repellent. It's something we fear. It's something we want to disassociate ourselves from. I wore white as if to say, I'm nobody anymore. I have been erased by this action. There is no longer the person I used to be. The person I used to be was laying in that casket. That's interesting. I never quite thought about it that way. My son earned his purple belt, and it was placed in the casket, and I just kept thinking, what a waste of a fucking purple belt. They're hard to earn, but it will do him no good where he's going. I don't say these things to be shocking or negative. I say them as a clarion, as a call to action and awareness for you junkies who think that you are not hurting anybody but yourself. You're destroying people like your father, your mother, your sister, your friends.
Your real friends.
The ones that bring out the best of you, not the worst of you.
No part of my son was available to help anybody else. His body seemed to me to be thrown away, destroyed, wasted. Very different from the experience that I shared with Fred. Thank you for listening. Mr. Nobody. Out.
Nevermore.
Waka 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 waka.